Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Before we do get started, I want to encourage you to nominate the show at podcastawards.com. We're running in the entertainment category, and your nomination can make a difference. You can nominate us once between now and April the 30th. So please nominate the show, podcastawards.com. Well, now it's time for today's episode of The Adventures of Michael Shane. The air date was sometime in 1948, and this is The Case of the Hunted Bride.
Half a dozen bullets smashed through the window. I just held my breath and said a few appropriate words to any archangels that might be listening. I felt something bite into my neck. I thought, so long, Mike. It's been fun.
New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. This is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to another transcribed episode with Michael Shane, that reckless, red-headed Irishman back at his old haunts in New Orleans. We call it The Case of the Hunted Bride.
Come in!
Mr. Michael Shane, the private detective.
Yeah, have a chair. I'll be finished shaving in a second.
Thank you. You always shave in your office?
Yeah, usually. That's good enough. You know, it's a funny thing about this razor. For years, it hummed genie with the light brown hair. The last couple of days, just can't seem to carry a tune.
I had no intention of seeing you when I came to New Orleans. I just wanted to see the city again, to perhaps recapture some of the pleasant memories. You see, I grew up here.
That's so?
Yes. And I wanted to see it just once more, before I die.
Which should be sometime around 1990.
Which will be tonight.
What's wrong with waiting till 1990?
It's my husband, George.
Yeah, it usually is.
No, you don't understand, Mr. Shane. I love George. He's my whole life.
Well, then why end it?
Knowing what I do, I can't go on. I don't want to live. And yet, what if I'm wrong? What if none of it is true? I want you to find out the truth.
Just what do you think is the truth, dear lady?
That my husband, George, is a murderer.
In a moment, we'll return to Mike Shane and the case of the hunted bride.
Her name was Grace Morris, Mrs. George Morrison, to be exact. She lived in the capital city of a neighboring state, and she was so madly in love with her husband, she was about to drop dead. If that's that love they write those beautiful songs about, I'll stick to my electric razor. Anyway, I told her to go back home, and I'd take a run up and see her as soon as I cleared up a few things around the office, and that we'd soon find out whether her husband was a murderer or not. In either case, I was to get my usual $20 a day. Lovable little me. As it turned out, I didn't arrive in her city until early the next evening. I registered in a little hotel, and then I telephoned her. Phone seemed to ring forever, and just when I was about to hang up... Hello? Mrs. Morrison? Hello?
Mr. Shane.
Hey. Hey, what's wrong?
I need...
Mrs. Morrison. Hello? Hello? 20 minutes later, a taxi let me out in front of a small bungalow. A guy was standing on the front porch, fumbling in his coat pocket. He heard me coming and spun around.
What do you want?
Morrisons live here.
What if they do?
Oh, I just talked to Mrs. Morrison on the phone. She sounded like she was in trouble.
What is this, another one of their tricks?
Whose tricks? Come on, get this door open.
I'm warning you, if you try anything...
You may be dying in there. Will you open this door?
Dying?
Step on it. Hey, what are you shaking for?
Well,
Here, give me that key.
If they've done anything to Grace... Grace! Grace, where are you?
Wait! Yes!
We found her on the floor in the hall with the telephone receiver still in her hand. The guy who turned out to be her husband carried her to a couch. I headed for the gas heater, shut off the gas, and started opening windows. When I got back to the living room, Grace was coming out of the fog.
You're going to be all right, sweetheart. You're going to be okay.
You better call a doctor, Mr. Morrison.
She looks okay.
Call a doctor. But what?
If we can work it without a doctor...
What's the matter? Don't you trust anybody?
Look, mister, I don't know who
now,
you are...
Now, let's not start that again. See if you got any spirits of ammonia in the house.
I think we have.
All right, put a spoonful in a glass of water and make it snappy.
All right. I'll get it right away.
Hey, Morrison, don't close the front door. We need air in here.
There's plenty of air coming through the windows. I'll get the medicine now.
Friendliest man in town.
George. George.
All right, easy.
Wasn't you. George. Easy. Couldn't have been you. George.
You just take it easy, Mrs. Morrison.
Mr. Shane.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of foolish, sweetheart.
What do you mean?
I'm the old-fashioned type. In my book, turning on the gas is foolish.
But I didn't turn on the gas.
What?
No. I guess I dozed off. Phone woke me up and the house was full of gas. I didn't realize how bad until I answered the phone and everything started blacking out.
And who did turn on the gas?
I don't know.
You think it was your husband, don't you?
I don't know.
Well, I don't think so. Not the way he acted when he came in here.
Mr. Shane, I don't know what to think anymore.
What makes you believe he's killed anybody?
I'll talk to you later.
No, while he's still upstairs.
No, Mr. Shane.
Come on, come on.
The telegrams. That's what started it.
Telegrams?
The first one came 6 months ago. George had been out of work for so long, and he was desperate. As soon as he got the telegram, he went away without saying a word. He came back 2 days later with $250.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. He
wasn't the same, George. He began having terrible nightmares. He'd wake up screaming he didn't want to kill. And that's not all that happened. Someone's trying...
Shh. He's coming back.
How are you feeling now, Grace?
Better, George. I don't know what happened, George.
It's okay. Okay, we'll talk about it later. Here, take a drink of this. They've done this.
Who's they, Morrison?
Huh? Oh, nothing. Come on, Grace. I'll take care of you.
He carried her upstairs, and the way they looked at each other, I wanted to whip out a violin and play gypsy music. What was going on here? Well, I lit a cigarette and wandered through the house, trying to make sense out of what Grace had told me. Trying to understand how that fitted in with the hem-stitched God Bless Our Happy Home that hung over the sofa. Then the phone started ringing. Hello?
So you got home in time to save your wife. Alrighty, we'll try again.
What?
How does it feel wondering when it's gonna happen? Wondering if it's gonna be you or your wife? Joe Blake didn't have to wonder, did he?
Joe Blake?
Wait a minute. Who is this?
This is Mike Shane. Now... Hello? Hello?
Put the phone down, Shane.
Yeah, but look.
I said put the phone down.
Sure. Some woman, she sounded like...
I know how she sounded.
Hey, who's Joe Blake?
It's getting late, Shane.
You're so subtle, Mr. Morrison. Who's Joe Blake?
Good night, Mr. Shane.
Before I go, can I ask you one final question, Mr. Morrison?
Well?
Who's Joe Blake? Ask a silly question, you get a silly answer. I heard the lock click behind me, and the lights went out inside the house. It was a cold, black night. A couple of blocks away, I saw a lighted street, and I heard a streetcar. I started walking toward it, and then I stopped. Not a sound. The sound was light. Might even have been a twig falling, only twigs don't wear shoes. The sound of the streetcar was louder now, but so were the footsteps. I'm a nervous guy. I put a cigarette in my mouth and struck a match, giving him a chance to pass me. I flicked the match away and watched it make an arc of flame. Before it could complete the arc, a bigger flame exploded in my head. Oh! I don't know how long it lasted. It was like spending the summer in a cement mixer. The pain didn't mean anything after a while, and I stopped trying to crawl away.
All right, Ralph, that's enough. I said that's enough!
Suddenly, everything stopped. Then I heard a nice, friendly sound. A gun getting ready for action.
Turn the flash on him, Ralph.
You can see him all right, Ruthie.
I want to see him better than all right. I want to watch his face when he gets it.
Ruthie, somebody might see us. Go on, get it over with.
I said turn the flash on him.
All right, all right.
They had the lights on Joey when he died.
All right, now you got your light. Hey, wait.
Huh?
This guy ain't Morrison.
No. No, he isn't.
How do you like that? The punk! Oh! Punk! Oh!
I guess eventually Ralph's foot started hurting him. Anyhow, he stopped kicking, and they left. For a long time, I lay there snuggling up to a couple of rusty garbage cans. A moth-eaten tomcat came up and stared at me for a long time, but he figured I was too big to eat, so he moved on, too. Outside of that, I was left all to myself, at peace among the melon rinds. It wasn't all wasted, though. I was beginning to fit things together. It sure looked now like husband George had killed Joe Blake. But finally, I was able to get to my feet and find a taxi and get back to my hotel. As I walked through the lobby of my hotel, somebody climbed out of an overstuffed chair and started toward me. It was George Morrison.
I've been waiting for you, Shane.
Oh, it's too bad.
What happened to your face?
I ran into some friends of yours, Morrison.
I want to see you upstairs.
Well, I hope that's a first aid kit you're holding in your pocket.
Upstairs, Shane.
All right, what do you want?
Grace finally admitted what you really were, Shane.
Oh, people have been calling me that for years.
We don't need any private detectives around here. Start packing. You're going back to New Orleans.
But I just got here.
Start packing.
Suppose I don't.
You'll find out you were wrong about what I got in my pocket.
Okay. Yeah, this suitcase sure gets a beating.
There's a train leaving here at midnight. I've already made your reservation.
Oh, that's mighty friendly of...
What's the matter?
Someone in the fire escape. Take a dive. Now! I took a dive to the floor myself, knocking over the lamp and plunging the room into darkness. Half a dozen bullets smashed through the window. I just held my breath and said a few appropriate words to any archangels who might be listening. I felt the splinter of glass bite into my neck. I thought, so long, Mike. It's been fun.
In a moment, we'll return to Mike Shane and the case of the hunted bride.
Life was getting complicated again. Here I leave the peace and quiet of New Orleans to come to this town, because Grace Morrison had decided her husband George was a murderer. And everything that had happened since my arrival had convinced me that the lady was so right. Now I was nibbling the rug on my hotel room floor while someone on the fire escape kept pumping bullets through the glass at George and me. Finally, I realized that the shooting had stopped. Then I heard footsteps down the fire escape. I raced to the window just as some guy reached the yard below. At the edge of the yard, a girl huddled against a fence, trying to keep out of range of the street lamp. She was wasting her time, though. Even from where I stood, I recognized her as Ruthie, the little sweetheart I'd met in the alley earlier in the evening. As I watched, the guy on the fire escape joined her. He turned out to be Ralph, the happy-go-lucky chap who'd tried to dropkick my head into the Gulf of Mexico. They hurried away. Then I remembered George Morrison.
Oh.
What's the matter with you? Here, let me get the light on. Where are you hit, Morrison?
In the shoulder.
Yeah. Here, let go of the gun. Not a good it, did you?
I didn't get a chance.
A time killer like you, it doesn't look too good.
What are you going to do?
Call a doctor?
No.
What have you got against doctors? You know, some of those guys are pretty talented.
Shane, put the phone down, please.
Operator. Operator.
Shane, I beg you. I don't care about myself, but for my wife's sake.
What do you mean?
If we get a doctor, he'll have to report it to the police. Everything will come out in the open.
You know, I think I'd like that.
Well, Grace wouldn't understand. Never be the same with us again. Now, please, Shane, give me a break. It's been tough enough.
Why are those two gunners trying to kill you?
Because they don't understand. Because they're blaming me for something I couldn't help.
For killing Joe Blake, huh? Did you kill him?
Shane, you don't understand.
Just answer me.
Now, listen, you...
Answer me. Did you kill Joe Blake?
Yes, but you... Shane.
Who's there?
The house detective, Mr. Shane.
Shane, if you'll let me explain, you'll understand everything.
All right. Stay here in the bedroom.
Well? What is it?
Some of the guests report hearing shots. They say they think they came from your suite, Mr. Shane.
My suite? Well, man, I was just taking a nap. Nice mattresses you got in this hotel.
You didn't hear any shots?
When I sleep, I don't hear nothing.
Yeah? Now, how come you heard my knock?
Yeah, that's right. You know, science has a lot of things to explain.
Shots didn't come from your bedroom.
No.
Well, all right. Sorry to have disturbed you, Mr. Shane.
Oh, it's okay, officer. Well, come around any time at all. Okay, now, George, start to... Hey, George. There wasn't any George. It was only a little trail of blood leading to the window. For the second time that night, somebody clattering down the fire escape. Leave it to a house stick to knock on the right door at the wrong time. After that, I did the only intelligent thing I'd done all day. I went to sleep. Early the next morning, I called Grace Morrison. She told me that George had come home late with his arm all banged up. Said he'd bumped into something. Then I went over to the police department. Being as coy as possible, I tried to find out if the cops were looking for George Morrison or a reasonable facsimile. They weren't. I went to the public library and got out all the old newspaper files. You know, I didn't find Morrison's name, but Joe Blake's name was scattered through the crime news like confetti. A cheap little hoodlum who'd done everything in the books. One picture showed him and Ruthie smiling at each other across a nightclub table. Ruthie looked better in those days. The last item said Joe was being sought in connection with a gangland murder. That was 6 months ago. There were no more papers. The librarian told me the other issues hadn't been bound yet, but she'd get them for me. I couldn't wait. Something was clicking in my brain. I left the library and headed for the corner drugstore. I found a phone booth, dialed the Times Express. I knew a guy on the crime beat. Pete? Yeah, hiya, kid. Long time no see. All right, it's Mike Shane. Yeah. Hey, Pete, can you give me a little information? Yeah. Ever hear of a guy named Joe Blake? Yeah. Yeah, I thought so. Well, tell me, what finally happened to Joe? There comes the dawn. And the guy who pulled it? Yeah, I know it's supposed to be confidential, but... was his name George Morrison? Yeah. Hey, Pete, tell me something, will you? Where do I go to donate my head to the fat drive? I'll explain later. Now, right now, I gotta make another call, quick. Oh, Shane, when they were passing out brains, you must have been out till lunch. Just a minute, Mac. I'll be right out. Hey, will you stop pounding up? Oh. I looked out to see who was making like a woodpecker on the glass, and I found myself looking into the little pink eyes of Ruthie's friend, Ralph. He motioned me to come out of the booth. Well, at the moment, there wasn't any place else to go.
Come on, Mr. Shane.
Oh, sure, but where?
Back to your hotel room.
Why?
You got company.
Not interested.
Get interested real fast. I got a gun right on your spine.
So we went back to my hotel room. He waited in the hallway till I unlocked the door and closed it behind me. Then I heard him going back down the hall. I stood for a moment in the darkness. Then I saw the glowing cigarette. I snapped on the light. It was Ruthie making herself very comfortable on the sofa. She sat up, smoothing her dress down with one hand and holding a gun in the other.
Nice couch.
Nice room. Mine.
I know. That's why I came.
I'm only paying for a single. He'll have to raise the rent.
Would you mind?
Yeah. You see, I can never be myself with a girl when she's holding a gun.
I want you to do something for me, Michael.
Sure. Coax me, Ruthie.
Get on the phone. I'm going to give you a number to call.
Swell. If a man answers, I'll hang up, huh?
I want you to call Brighton 4506.
Brighton 45... That's George Morrison's number.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I want to, Ruthie, honey.
It's a shame, Michael. And I'm going to have to kill you. Go on, get on that phone. Brighton 4506.
Yeah.
Operator?
Brighton 4506.
4506, thank you.
What do you want me to say?
I want you to tell George Morrison to come over and see you right away. Tell him it's very urgent.
As the phone rang, I glanced out the window. Down on the sidewalk, I saw Ralph leaning against a lamppost and reading a paper. I guess it was then that the idea came to me. It wasn't great, but so what? I had about as much chance as a guy buying a ticket on the Irish sweepstakes, only if I lost, I couldn't just tear up the ticket and try again next year.
Hello?
Oh, hello, Grace. This is Mike Shane.
Oh, Mr. Shane, I'm so glad you called.
I'd like to speak to your husband, George.
He's on his way over to see you at the hotel. I don't know what for.
What?
Yes, he...
Oh, fine.
Well?
You're in luck, Ruthie. Morrison's on his way over here now.
Isn't that nice, Mike?
You must have gone for Joe Blake in a big way.
We were so right for each other, Joe and I. When that happens, you don't want to lose it. Where are you going?
Open this window. It's stuffy in here.
Sit down. You get nervous, Mike.
Me fresh out of bromides.
I said sit down.
But I didn't sit down right away. Now the plan had to work. There was nothing else. I looked down at Ralph again. While I watched, he looked up. I sat down on the windowsill, lit a cigarette. Ruth was thinking about Joe Blake. You could tell it by looking at her eyes and lips. She didn't even notice me. I signaled to Ralph with my head for him to come up. He dropped the newspaper and looked confused, but he didn't move. Now, the plan was no good. I started walking again.
I told you, sit down, Mike.
Okay, Ruthie, but I've seen it work in a lot of bad pictures.
What are you talking about?
Nothing.
You get it.
Okay. Yeah?
Let me talk to Ruth.
Oh, you better tell her that yourself.
Huh? I told you.
Hello? Hello?
Hey, what's going on up there? I'm coming up.
He hung up.
Who was it?
It was your friend Ralph.
What did he say?
George Morrison just came into the lobby. He's on his way upstairs.
All right. Sit down on that chair.
Funny about love, isn't it, Ruthie? When it's right, you're singing in the rain. When it's wrong...
There was nothing wrong with Joe and me. It's the only good thing that ever happened to me. And Morrison had to destroy it.
It wasn't Morrison. He just did what he was told.
Did what he was told?
Ruth, there's only a few seconds left. This is the last chance you're ever going to have in all this world. Give me that gun.
No. Open the door for Morrison and then duck.
No.
Hurry up.
Suppose it's your boy, Ralph.
Are you kidding? Open that door, Shane, or you'll never open another one.
No, Ruthie.
All right, Mike.
In a moment, we'll be back with a thrilling climax to tonight's Michael Shane adventure.
The
first shot, I ducked fast. Then I realized that she wasn't shooting at me. She was shooting through the door. And even before the smoke cleared away, a trickle of red began slipping in from under the door like a calling card. She started for the door, chuckling to herself like she'd suddenly gotten the tagline of a joke that had been bothering her for weeks. Then she opened the door and saw her pal Ralphie crumpled in the hall. She stopped laughing. She stood in the doorway, her head thrown back like she was going to sing grand opera. Only all that came out was one piercing, crazy scream. Yeah, it was all over. All the way around. I called Grace Morrison from the railroad station. I only had a couple of minutes, so I told it to her fast. I guess a little too fast.
But I don't understand, Mr. Shane. You say I was wrong about George?
Yeah, completely wrong.
But those telegrams, his nightmares, those people who tried to kill him.
Well, I haven't time to tell you everything, Mrs. Morrison. Just take my word for it. Those jobs he's been going on, they're so legal, it hurts. You know, sometimes I think a lot of marriages would be better off if they changed that love, honor, and obey routine to just love, honor, and trust. You know what I mean, Grace? Yeah. That's just about the whole story. Except for one little footnote printed in small type and strictly between us boys. What I told Grace was partly the truth. Those jobs George Morrison goes on are perfectly legal. But her one big fear is absolutely correct. Every time George gets one of those telegrams, he does kill a man, just as he killed Joe Blake. Still, if George doesn't want her to know, well, then I guess that's his business. Because, you see, George Morrison is the official state prison executioner. Yeah, the guy who pulls the switch.
Michael Shane is written for radio by Larry Marcus from characters created by Brett Halliday. The music is composed and conducted by John Duffy, and Michael Shane is portrayed by Jeff Chandler. The Adventures of Michael Shane is a Don Sharp production, transcribed in Hollywood and distributed exclusively by the Broadcasters Guild. Next week, you'll hear Michael Shane in another suspense thriller. It's a story you'll long remember and one I will never forget.
This is Andrea J. Graham, author of the Web Surfer series, oh, and A Madam's Wife. You're listening to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio.
Welcome back. Well, some great hard-boiled dialogue in this. It's not quite at the over-the-top Pat Novak level, but it certainly gives it a very strong flavor. And a pretty good final scene with the would-be murderess killing her accomplice. Well, we do now turn to listener comments and feedback. And we have a few comments regarding Michael Shane, and particularly the old series. Kim says, Adam, I think this is the first time I've emailed during the last few years. Or third time I've emailed during the last few years. Thanks again for hosting the show. I think the best part of the show is your commentary. Please don't ever back off from that part of the show. I wanted to comment on the Michael Shane episodes. I really appreciate how Mike shows much more respect for his female assistant than others in this genre, namely Nick Carter. I used to grit my teeth at the disdain that came through Nick's comments to his assistants. Well, thanks so much, Kim. Yeah, there were definitely some issues with Nick's attitude towards Patsy. I think particularly as it relates to modern listeners, but even at the time, it really wasn't necessary as a Michael Shane show. Then I did have another comment from Jenny regarding Michael Shane. She writes, I want to tell you how much I've enjoyed the Michael Shane episodes with Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. And I'm sorry to see them end. Michael Shane series, I've also enjoyed Kathy Lewis as Phyllis Knight. I liked her in My Friend Irma, and it's nice that Phyllis Knight is more of an assistant than in many shows of the time. Previously, I'd only heard the Jeff Chandler version and don't care for it. Every encounter with a man seems to be an excuse for fisticuffs, because the fists start flying for no reason I can pick up. My biggest reason may be that I don't like how shy biologist Mr. Boynton from Armist Brooks is acting. Jenny, of course, raises a good point. At the time, and actually right after he did Michael Shane, Jeff Chandler up the role of Mr. Boynton on Armist Brooks and held that role until he, you know, really came into his own in screen stardom in the 1950s. You know, you've heard that saying, a face that was made for radio. And perhaps it applies to many people, including your host. But Jeff Chandler was definitely someone to whom that saying did not apply. However, when he came into Hollywood, he got into an accident that temporarily left him with a big scar on his forehead, which wasn't going to get him movie casting calls, and that kind of led to a temporary career in radio. He landed the lead role in Michael Shane. He also played in Armist Brooks, Frontier Town, and he also did some guest spots on Suspense. However, he would become one of the big movie stars of the 1950s. He won was given an Academy Award nomination for his role as Cochise in Broken Arrow, and would have a phenomenal career in the 1950s, as he possessed extremely noteworthy good looks mixed in with some prematurely gray hair that really contributed to his success. He also did producing and singing, so he's definitely an interesting talent. And this is kind of, when you listen to Michael Shane, this is before he really hit it big. And he was, at the time this first started airing, he was about 2 years away from an Academy Award nomination. But he would also, for old fans of old-time radio, he's probably better remembered as Mr. Boynton. And certainly when we get into Jeff Chandler app extras, we'll be throwing in a few episodes of Armist Brooks from his era. Well, that will do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow for The Avenger. And then next Monday, it's another episode of The New Adventures of Michael Shane. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.